So, yeah, with this talk this morning, I want to explore how the sadhanas we've been given arose as Bhante lived out his spiritual life. And I will be telling some of the stories of his encounters with his teachers and with his yidams, which are our history, our lineage. And with the process of researching and writing the talk has been a real pleasure, a very deep pleasure. It's been such a lovely thing to be doing. I spent a whole weekend delving into various writings and all sorts of things. And I've been in correspondence also with Padmavajra asking, he was responding to some questions I had, which was also really lovely, actually. And one point that Padmavajra made, which I wanted just to say now, he made the point that dwelling more fully on Bhante and his lineage is a way of opening to Adhisthana, which, as Bhante has said, is there all the time in the teacher, if we're open to that. Well, I find spiritual biography very, very inspiring. Always do. I usually take a spiritual biography if I can on a solitary retreat. Very, very inspiring. But it's also interesting to see it as a blessing, and maybe that's why it's so inspiring. You're being blessed by the life of that person, that practitioner. And I think that's something for us to think about ourselves, perhaps as we take our place in history. Padmashri has her biography on the shelves now, autobiography, and perhaps more of those will be inspiring future practitioners down the ages. So yeah, Bhante has been very keen to pass on his sadhanas, and he's told us that they are a way for us and for the order to maintain that spiritual connection with him, with that vital spiritual force that is Bhante. And in thinking about this talk and writing it, I've clocked a bit more deeply for myself, I think, how that works, why that is, which may be sort of obvious for many people. But as I've researched the talk and read the stories, I've come to realise how much our sadhanas are the result of relationship, spiritual friendship. So it feels like they're sort of relational, first between Bhante and his teachers, and later on Bhante with one or another of his disciples. They feel as though they have a relational quality to them. And as part of this, I found myself feeling that Bhante's relationships with his yidams, even his sadhanas, sometimes seem to have come as much from Bhante himself, from his own being, as from his teachers. It feels quite a mysterious coming together of the two. So yes, I've been deeply moved and really impressed, deeply impressed actually. I must reread Bhante's memoirs right from the beginning. I've been dipping into them, but yeah, reading them with a quest, you sort of get into some detail, don't you? I've been so moved by them. Apparently one is being relaunched. It's part of the complete works in April, such a leader's been telling me, which is Precious Teachers and... which is the other one? It's got in the sign of the golden wheel, which has all of this information, or a lot of this, of Bhante's life and his meeting with his teachers. So yes, I've been following Bhante as he opens his experience to us through his memoirs and his talks, and just remembering how passionate and how dedicated Bhante was in his search for the Dharma. And he really did have to search for the Dharma, didn't he? His search also to go beyond himself, which is so impressive, not really knowing where he was going and willing to try anything, so it seemed, really, really willing to try anything. So easy to think of, for us to think of Bhante as an old man, isn't it? Because he's been an old man in our midst for so sort of long almost, fairly frail at times physically, and yet still with that inner vigour quite often coming through in his being. But it was a vigorous and dark-haired man in the prime of life who ordained me in 1986. And it was a very young man that we'll be meeting in these stories. We'll be hearing of Bhante between the ages of 21 and 39, which is his time in India, exploring the Dharma, finding the Dharma. So now, if you're sitting comfortably, we shall begin. So we meet Bhante first, having left the army, and he's wandering in India with a companion He's seeking. He has an avid curiosity. He's open to learning from books and through discussions with absolutely anyone he meets, it seems, whether of any religious persuasion, Hindu, Buddhist, Parsi, whatever. He's just, that's one of his great characteristics, his great openness I've been feeling in reading. And wandering, he ends up at Ramana Maharshi's ashram in southern India in 1949, and he's 24. So just imagine yourselves at 24 for a moment. So he and his companion stay for 3 weeks in a cave on Mount Arunachala. And it's a cave where the Maharshi himself had lived for many years, apparently. Bhante sleeps on the tomb of a long-dead saint. It's very evocative. He's in this cave. It's the Virupaksha cave. And Virupaksha is apparently the guardian king of the Western Quarter, which is interesting in relation to the vision of Amitabha, of course. It's the place of Virupaksha. And I wanted to start here because I wanted to get a sense of, well, obviously Bhante's had this very spontaneous vision of Amitabha here and then, but why? You know, to try and get a sense of the context, if I could, of how it arose, what it arose out of, if anywhere. So yes, it's very hot, very dusty, and Bhante and his companion appear to live on daily curries of many red chilies, and have to recover after eating before they can do anything else. Bhante says, in our way of life and even in our appearance, we were now virtually indistinguishable from all the other hermits and ascetics who live on the sacred hill. So you've got an image of Bhante, I imagine, like dusty, wrapped in, I don't know, dhoti and whatever. Yes, and again, I was just really struck by Bhante's total openness in his quest for the truth. They take darshan from the Maharshi daily, and they seek his advice on whatever they intend to do while they're there on the hill. Bhante says he's very affected by the atmosphere in the darshan, but also there's the place in general has a very, very strong, vibrant atmosphere. And he has to walk from the cave to the ashram. And there's really a beautiful passage where he's describing walking through a very still, very tranquil valley. And he says of the valley, let's see, it's as though someone even greater than the Maharshi had once dwelt there. He feels he's so receptive to the atmosphere. Very, very beautiful. And there's a sound also that has a profound effect on him. It's the temple bell, which Bhante hears tolling over and over again, even in his dreams. And I'm going to read a short excerpt here. Hour after hour, it seemed to toll, incessant and insistent. Wave after wave of brazen sound breaking upon me like the repeated thunder of surf on the seashore. Sometimes it was as though the bell swinging outside was striking against the hill, and that the hill was the bell. Between the hill and the bell, between the anvil and the hammer, I was being reshaped, was being beaten into something. I knew not what. I was being changed. So it's very, very powerful, isn't it? That image of just his openness to this bell. There's something very, very mysterious going on here, isn't it? Something of the spiritual significance of sound, I thought. Almost as though the bell is a mantra. It's a mantra, a natural mantra, mantra in nature. It's a meaning that's trying to beat its way into Bhante's being. So it was one night when Bhante was staying in the cave that he received the vision of Amitabha, the Buddha of the West. And he says it appeared somewhere between, some point between waking and sleeping. So he wasn't in meditation when it appeared. The figure was a deep, rich, luminous red, the colour of rubies, soft and glowing like the setting sun. And he says of this vision, the rich red colour of Amitabha himself, as well as the two lotuses and the setting sun, made a particularly deep impression on me, more wonderful and appealing than any earthly red. Yeah, and the effect of this vision was to endure all Bhante's life. And we know, as we know, it formed the basis of the Amitabha sadhana that we practice now in Tri Ratna. And yes, so Amitabha, as we know, wasn't the seated Amitabha with the hands in meditation position. He had his right hand holding aloft a very beautiful open lotus flower. So there's some significance in Bhante receiving that vision, I thought, of a Buddha in action. He's in action, giving the Dharma, perhaps, giving the lotus of the opening to the truth. And obviously Bhante's spiritual life, his movement, neither of them have been based only in silent meditation, as we know. There's definitely an impulse of the Bodhisattva ideal of action. So the colours in the vision had a big impact on Bhante, these beautiful reds, as did the colours of the Himalayan region where he found himself later on. He often refers to the beauty of the colours. He was very struck by the spiritual significance of colour. Its effect can go very deep, go beyond the rational mind. And he says of this at one point, "It is the colour that gives one the inner feeling of the Buddha or Bodhisattva. Something indefinable that cannot be put into words." And once asked about the effect on him of the green Tara visualization, he said, "What one experiences is the spiritual equivalent of greenness. When one experiences the greenness as a colour, and as more than a colour, as a symbol, then to that extent one experiences Tara." That's from the tantric path of symbolism of colour and mantric sound. So it's as though Bhante at this time in the ashram takes in the experience of colour or sound or the more physical quality of darshan. He's just taking in and receiving and contemplating very purely, very sort of deeply. There seems to be no barriers to his, sort of receptivity almost. He's letting the bell ring him, the colour become his mind, the energy of presence in the darshan flow through him. So yeah, I wanted to, the description of the vision of Bhante's vision of Amitabha is very well known to us, but I wanted to give some of those circumstances around how it came about. Obviously it's still a mystery how it came about, but those are the conditions, some of the conditions in him, and as we know, that led up to at that time. As far as we know, Bhante wasn't particularly reflecting on Amitabha, but there was that he received Amitabha, or Amitabha rose out of him, who knows. Bhante says in many places, he said quite often, that insight will have its expression in action. He says insight is as insight does, doesn't he? There is no insight without some sort of action. And Bhante's vision led to a decisive change in his life. He says, "The vision in the cave convinced me that our 2 years apprenticeship to the holy life had come to an end, and that we must now retrace our steps to northern India and seek ordination." He says, "My desire for ordination had become unbearably intense." So he and his companion travel north, and in so doing they meet Jagdish Kashyap, who helps them find ordination. He points them to the teacher who ordained them. And later, as we know, Jagdish takes Bhante as a student. Bhante says at this time that studying with Jagdish Kashyap, those months were some of the happiest months of his life. He really, really loved his time with Jagdish Kashyapji, he calls him. Not only did he love that time, but they led to several major turning points in Bhante's own personal spiritual life. So at some point when he was out travelling with Jagdish Kashyap, Bhante is given a copy of Thomas Merton's book Seeds of Contemplation, which has a very powerful effect on Bhante. Bhante says several of his insights, of Thomas Merton's insights, appeared strikingly relevant to my own spiritual situation, even to my own spiritual needs. For some time past, I'd been greatly preoccupied with the question of the ego, not only with the theoretical question of what it was, or was not, but with a more practical one of how to get round it, or get rid of it, or get beyond it. Meditation did not seem enough. Well, that's interesting, isn't it? Meditation did not seem enough. Something more drastic and more down to earth was needed. It's fascinating. In Seeds of Contemplation, I found what I wanted. The disciple should surrender his will absolutely to the will of his spiritual superior. I resolved to apply it forthwith to my relations with Kashyapji. He sort of gets straight in there, isn't he? I just find it so moving, Bhante's sincerity in his search here, and his just openness to just, you know, really wants to do anything he can to let go of that ego of his. And of course that does change Bhante's life, making that decision and stepping in that direction. Bhante puts it into practice, which wasn't easy because Kashyapji was very humble and unassuming and not at all assertive, he says. But at the end of their visit to Kalimpong, Kashyapji does ask something of Bhante, as we know. Kashyapji has made the decision not to go back to the university in Benares. He asks Bhante to remain in Kalimpong. Stay here and work for the good of Buddhism. The Newars will look after you. And Bhante says he has some doubt whether the Newars will look after him, really. And he doesn't feel ready to work for the good of Buddhism. But he says, there was little I could say. The word of the Guru was not to be disobeyed. Bowing my head in acquiescence, I paid my respects in the traditional manner. Kashyapji gave me his blessing, and the jeep drove off. So you can imagine him sort of bowing to Kashyapji, and off a trail of dust. That his guru has just gone. So it's 1950, and Bhante's 24 years old. At this point where he's left to work for the good of Buddhism in Kalimpong. And Bhante comments something I hadn't noticed before. He says he'd never been alone before in his whole life. He'd always had a companion or a family, or, you know, he'd never been alone. But now he'd been left on his own in Kalimpong. But he seems to, I don't know how he felt, he quietly makes a life for himself in Kalimpong. He seems to revel in the landscape, the blue skies, the sort of snowy ranges of the Himalayas, the bright colours, the weird and really wonderful collection of people he finds in that border town of Kalimpong. So Bhante is now in Kalimpong in his life there. But something is turning around inside him in relation to Kashyapji's injunction, and Bhante expresses it in a beautiful haiku. Behind me, the old gate shuts. Before me, opens a new gate of gold. And then, just quoting Bhante, it gave expression to the fact that in the weeks following Kashyapji's departure, I had grown accustomed to the idea of working for the good of Buddhism, had even started to accept it. For the past 3 years, even longer, I'd been concerned with the needs of my own spiritual life. That was the old gate shutting behind me. It was now time to pay attention to the needs of others. That was a new gate that was opening before me, the new gate of gold. I just hadn't remembered that at all from Bhante's life. It's just, so very, 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 very spiritually beautiful, I suppose, very, very strong. So, and it's just so moving. So Bhante's about 24 or 25 at this point. And I actually, what I was interested was, I'd never really thought of Bhante having to make that journey to move from being self-referential to working for the needs of others. I always think of him as just spontaneously working for the needs of others. But he's actually, you know, there's more he's been doing, and this is the step he's taking, and he's very consciously deciding to work for the good of others. This is a really big turning point for him in his early time in Kalimpong. And in this, he's inspired by Shantideva, and also Dr. Ambedkar. He's reading Shantideva's Shiksa Samuchaya, the compendium of the training of the Bodhisattva, which he says was a deep influence was being exerted upon me by the Bodhisattva ideal in reading the Shiksa Samuchaya. And also he's in correspondence with Dr. Ambedkar. Having read Ambedkar's article, The Buddha and the Future of His Religion, Ambedkar had written back to Bhante, and in it he said he was strongly urging Bhante and other bhikkhus to come out of their shell and be in the first rank of fighting forces to bring about the revival of Buddhism in India. Okay. Yes. And these words seem to have had a very strong effect on Bhante. He took it to heart, and he realizes it's, well, I mean, he doesn't say this directly, but it feels like he decides it's time to come out of his shell. And again, that is significant because he goes to visit the Tamang Buddhists in Darjeeling. It's on the same page as his decision. Then he goes out and he visits these Tamang Buddhists. And it's that day that he sees Padmasambhava, that huge image of Padmasambhava, two or three life size apparently, in the Tamang temple. Having taken it in, I felt that it had always been there, and that in seeing the figure of Padmasambhava, I had become conscious of a spiritual presence that had in fact been with me all the time. Though I had never seen the figure of Padmasambhava before, it was familiar to me in the way that no other figure on earth was familiar. Familiar and fascinating. It was familiar as my own self, yet at the same time infinitely mysterious, infinitely wonderful and infinitely inspiring. From then on, the figure of the precious Guru, Guru Rinpoche, was to occupy a permanent place in my inner spiritual world. Yeah. So there's, you know, there's just something arising in Bansi, isn't there? That's it's mysterious again. It's something in him that's, is present. And we know how much a place in Bansi's life Padmasambhava came to have, and his inner experience. And there's an interesting little story, which I'm making really little. When he comes back to England, I think it's in Brighton, he's giving a lecture to a Buddhist society in Brighton. And a lady called Violet comes up to him at the end of the talk and he says, "Who was that figure standing behind you in the talk?" And she describes the figure, and it's like, you know, it's got the hat of Padmasambhava. It seems like it's Padmasambhava. And Bhante actually, so he says he goes back several times to Brighton. He becomes quite a good friend with Violet. Yeah, it's quite sweet. This is all before FWBO days, I think. So several years now pass in which Bhante is working for the good of Buddhism in Kalimpong and beyond, engaged in literary work. And also, I think, going to India at this point, I was just Dr. Ambedkar's, the mass conversion of the Ex Untouchables was in 1956, I think I'm right in saying. So it's within this time that Bhante then goes to the plains and he's giving those talks, living with the aftermath of Dr. Ambedkar's passing, just letting the Dharma sort of flow through him. But also working in his literary work too in Kalimpong. But in 1957, he says, another turning point came. He's 32 by now. And he's again beginning to feel what he calls something of an impasse in my personal spiritual development. And he's still grappling with the problem of the ego. He says, how could the ego get beyond the ego? That was the question. And around that time, I think he met Dinshaw Mehta, or possibly remembered his meeting with him. And he was a Parsi mystic who believed that while he was in a state of trance, he received direct guidance from God. And this was a key for Bhante when he heard that. He thought, yes, that was a key for him. He says, one could get beyond the ego only with the help of something or someone that was itself beyond the ego. What was that something? Perhaps it was Ishta Devatar or Yidam. So that's the sequence of how he comes to think, yes, what I'd like to do is give myself over to the influence of a Yidam. He always has a reason, doesn't he? It's moving into his next phase. And it's around that time, quite soon after that, that he meets Chetral Sangye Dorje. He describes meeting Chetral Sangye Dorje, who was apparently very unconventional, eminent lama, but unconventional, a bit of a magician. But also he obviously had very solid common sense. Bhante talks to him and he feels very impressed by Chetral Sangye Dorje. He says his very presence inspired me with confidence. And it's just in that first conversation when he talks to Chetral Sangye Dorje and he feels that confidence, he decides to put himself in Chetral's hands and he asks Chetral to tell him who his Yidam was. He thereupon told me that my Yidam was Green Tara, the female Bodhisattva of fearlessness and spontaneous helpfulness. adding that she'd been the Yidam of many of the great pandits of India and Tibet. So that was on the 8th of March 1957. I guess all of us who do the Tara practice should perhaps think of that day, remember that date as an anniversary. The 8th of March 1957. And Banti describes how Chatral bestows the initiation on him, pronouncing the 10-syllable mantra very forcefully. Something I found interesting, just to think of that, the very forceful quality of that initiation. Obviously, we think of Tara often as being very tender, but here the mantra is said very forcefully. There's that, what's that very great deep strength of Tara also, and the shattering, strong quality of compassion. Yeah. And I thought it's interesting that Banti should have chosen for him Green Tara as a Yidam. He's a young, vigorous man, wasn't he? Out there, very active in the plains and elsewhere, scholarly. Right, so perhaps, you know, Pabasamava Manjugosha, but, you know, Green Tara is chosen for him. And Banti recounts, this meant that Green Tara was a transcendental counterpart of my own mundane nature. I had an affinity with Green Tara, and it was on account of that affinity that I could, by devotion to her, by becoming her, most readily gain access to the transcendental realm to which she belonged. And he practices the Green Tara Sadhana faithfully every day for 7 years. It's a self-visualization. So I always find that interesting, thinking of Banti visualizing himself as Tara every day, which is quite a tender thought. And somewhere in my reading, I came across a passage where he says, I think it helped me to become a little kinder and more compassionate. I'm sure many of us will have experienced Banti's kindness, won't we? Very much so. And a tenderness as well, a very tender quality. And I was thinking also, well, that spiritual receptivity seems to be a quality of Tara, and if Banti hasn't gotten that, I don't know who has. He's just so completely open and receptive. So I received that practice at my own ordination, and I remember receiving this little scrap of paper, and the sadhana was about, maybe, I don't know how many lines. It was a small paragraph. Was it 6 lines, 7 lines, 8 lines long? Very much in need of oral, you know, a lot of help to help you to know how to practice it. That was the sadhana that was given. And that's been passed, you know, into the order. Quite a number of people will be doing that Green Tara sadhana. So Banti says he formed an immediate connection with Chatral Rinpoche. There was a lifelong bond between them. Chatral apparently said of Banti that he never failed the Samaya with him. So he always felt that the Samaya, with the bond with Banti was there, was strong. And yes, Banti has also said it was impossible for him to think of a practice, a sadhana, a visualization practice that he'd taken up without thinking of the teacher who had given it to him. So that's very moving too. Yesterday I went round Banti's rooms in the annex here, and they're full of tankers and small and large rupas. There's quite a number of pictures of Chatral Rinpoche there and his other teachers as well. Very, very lovely and moving. It was quite a strong atmosphere, I felt. Bhadramati was saying it's like going on a pilgrimage, and it's like going on a pilgrimage. It's, yeah, really, really moving to see that. And you sort of feel his devotion to the archetypal realm just through being there, being in that room. So by this time, Banti had also met Dada Rinpoche, of whom he received a very, very positive impression. Though he says their friendship developed more slowly than with Chatral Rinpoche. They worked together quite a lot. You pick that up from the biographies. They resolved a dispute together in 1952, and Banti says he formed the impression of someone with sheer goodwill and integrity and candour. Sheer goodwill, candour and integrity. Banti at this point would have been about 27, and Dada Rinpoche about 34. So both young, vigorous Dharma farers, aren't they? Very active for the Dharma, and they do work together, sort of cross sectarian Buddhism in Kalimpong. Very inspiring what they do. He says they spoke together in Hindi mixed with bits of English, Tibetan and Sanskrit. plus an intuitive come telepathic element. He said with that combination, they could and did talk about anything, and a real friendship developed. So you get this lovely sort of sense, don't you, of the two of them. And I haven't got time to tell you any of the stories, but I'm sure you all know stories of them going together to the Buddha Jayanti and whatever. And as we know, Bhante came to revere Dada Rinpoche as a living bodhisattva, perfect in his mindfulness and practice of the six perfections, and eventually asking Dada Rinpoche to confer on him the bodhisattva ordination, which Bhante received in 1962, which again was another turning point for Bhante in his life, very much as he says. The next great lama that Bhante meets is Khatchu Rinpoche, and their first meeting happens when Bhante's acting as a translator for an American couple who are meeting up with Khatchu Rinpoche, asking questions about meditation practice in particular. And during the meeting, Bhante gradually realizes that Khatchu Rinpoche is answering the questions even before Bhante's translated them. So there's something going on. So there's definitely a telepathic element in Khatchu Rinpoche. He can sort of respond without even having the translation. Bhante said that Khatchu Rinpoche had a real gift for friendship, and Bhante saw him both as a teacher and a friend. He said that Khatchu Rinpoche really took an interest in him, taking the initiative with Bhante to teach him, something which Bhante said was unusual in his life. So that's quite moving to think, isn't it, that Khatchu Rinpoche really stepped towards Bhante and bore him in mind, actually, in what his needs might be, spiritually speaking and as a human being. The great Nyingma guru, Jamyang Khyentsey, had arrived in Kalimpong in 1957 as well. And Khatchu Rinpoche urges Bhante to ask him for the Wang Kur, or the empowerment into the Manjigosha sadhana. So the name Jamyang apparently means Manjigosha, and Jamyang Khyentsey was regarded as the living manifestation of that bodhisattva. So it was a very auspicious opportunity to ask Jamyang Khyentsey to receive the Manjigosha sadhana from him. But Bhante does not immediately go for this, apparently. He says he didn't want to just collect empowerments like English schoolboys collecting postage stamps. So he sort of holds off a bit and thinks about it. He had to be sure he wanted to practice another sadhana in addition to the one he already had received. But quite soon he does decide he would like to do this. And on the 24th of October 1957, Bhante goes to Darjeeling, actually, to meet Jamyang Khyentsey. And to his surprise, he's told he will be receiving not one Wang Kor, but four. So in addition to the Manjigosha Stuti sadhana, Bhante receives the sadhanas of the four-armed Avalokiteshvara, Rothfor Vajrapani, and another Green Tara sadhana. And as we know that story, unfortunately Bhante has this really awful toothache, doesn't he? He's got a gum infection, it sounds like. So he's in a lot of pain, but he is able to still take in the spiritual beauty of the Rinpoche as he looks up with a rapt expression as he invokes each bodhisattva. So it's a bit, you always get this impression he's looking up and he's calling on each one. And it's as if he actually saw their diaphanous rainbow-like forms floating in the air before him. So that was Bhante's experience of through the blur of the toothache. He's got this really strong sense of Jamyang Khyentse's connection with the Yidams as he was conferring the initiations. So in preparing for this talk, I read for the first time an amazing piece, really amazing piece of writing by Bhante. It's on his website, and he'd written it in 2017. It's called Green Tara and the Fourth Lakshana. Probably some of you will have come across it. It's very, very beautiful, and it relates to this particular initiation. It relates to this particular set of four bodhisattvas. What he says, that's right, they do make a set. Just reading what he's written, you really felt Bhante has a very, very deep insight into them. So I'll just read a bit of that, but it's obviously very available for us all to read the whole thing. So he's talking about how they relate with each other, these four bodhisattvas. I also saw that the four bodhisattvas were in a relationship of correspondence, in the hermetic sense, with the Lakshanas, the Samadhis, and the Vimokshas. Concentrating on the insubstantiality of things, one enters into the Shunyata Samadhi and sees the Bodhisattva Manjigosha. He is golden yellow in colour and wears the jewels and silks of a prince. Concentrating on the unsatisfactoriness of things, one enters into the wishless Samadhi and sees the figure of Avalokiteshvara, pure white in colour. Concentrating on the impermanence of things, one enters into the signless Samadhi and sees Vajrapani. He is dark blue in colour, like indigo or lapis lazuli. Concentrating on the repulsiveness of conditioned things, one enters into the Samadhi of pure beauty and sees Green Tara, who has the colour of emeralds or jade. And so he goes on to talk about the gates, the gateways as well. It's very, very lovely, actually. So now Bhante has got, he takes on to practice every day the sadhanas of Green Tara, continuing the sadhana he has received from Chatral Rinpoche and also Manjigosha. So he practices them in the order he's received them every morning, gets up particularly early. And he said he came to see them as being not mutually exclusive, but complementary, insofar as they were aspects or emanations of the Dharmakaya. He says he never managed to practice the Vajrapani practice that he was given at that point, which was very, very complex, but he wrote a simpler sadhana for order members who'd been asked to take up that practice afterwards. He also says, he says he continued to practice Anapanasati as needed, and mindfulness in the broader sense I continued to cultivate assiduously, doing my best to remain aware of whatever I thought, said, did, and felt throughout the day. So that was like the bedrock of just life. It was this ongoing, very strong practice of mindfulness. So he wasn't just head in the clouds with beautiful beings. And he used to call on Manjigosha when he was writing his literary pieces, his literary work. Apparently when he was writing The Three Jewels, if there was something he did not understand or he couldn't really express adequately, he would immediately go to his shrine room and practice the Manjigosha Stuti Sadhana. And when he went back to his writing, everything was clear and he could just carry on. And apparently he wasn't actually thinking about what the problem was or the thing he was trying to clarify in doing that. He just did the sadhana and everything became clear. So, yeah, you do get the impression that sadhana was very, very dear to Bhante. Manjigosha Stuti Sadhana. He was so happy. He writes... it might be his very, very long letter to Paramatha that's also on that website, and he writes there how very, very pleased he was to hear that there had been a retreat at Adisthana for the Manjigosha Stuti Sadhana, and I can't remember what he said, like 60 people or 50 people were here practicing that very practice. He was just really, really pleased. It was just moving to read that. Jamyang Khyentse presented Bhante with a tanka depicting this set of bodhisattvas from the initiation with Manjigosha at the centre. And there's a snowy mountains and there's two caves, and Bhante is depicted sitting in each of these two caves. There's two aspects of Bhante in these caves in the tanka. And there's a whole range of teachers, including Milarepa. Bhante says he can't remember who the teachers were. But Jamyang Khyentse said that this tanka represented that he had received the essence of the teachings of those masters, thereby becoming their spiritual heir and successor of those particular masters in the tanka. And Bhante sort of lent the tanka to somebody and he never saw it again, I think. So Bhante was often not particularly interested in that sort of thing, but it is interesting to hear about that, isn't it? Yeah. So, yes, not too far to go now in the long story of the small snapshots of all these wonderful teachers. So Bhante next meets Dujon Rinpoche, and that's in 1959. And this is how Bhante describes his first sighting of Dujon Rinpoche. And Dujon Rinpoche is taking part in the ritual consecration of some ground prior to he builds a new temple in Kalimpong. He stood absolutely still, and I had the distinct impression that it was not just a bodily stillness. His mind also was absolutely still, as though the various winds that usually agitate the surface of our consciousness had in his case ceased to blow, and he was at peace. Then Bhante receives the Vajrasattva Sadhana from Dujon Rinpoche on the 18th of April, 1959. So that's the Vajrasattva birthday, 18th of April. And he says of Dujon Rinpoche, his experience of him in that, at that time, "It was his liveliness and spontaneity that impressed me. It was as though he delighted in being alive." And Bhante compares him to a great ocean, the depths of which were absolutely calm, but on whose surface innumerable waves danced and sparkled in the sunlight. So it's very, very beautiful. He also describes him as very, very graceful and quite petite and quite feminine looking, with very long hair, which he sometimes wound over, plaited and wound over his head, or sometimes he just had it on his shoulders. So this is apparently one of the greatest Nyingmapa lamas of the century, who Bhante was meeting. And the sadhana he received from Dujon Rinpoche is not the one we usually do in the order at all, really, which actually comes from the Mula Yogas, which Bhante received slightly later. But this was an extremely complex one called the essence of the profound meaning being the one mudra sadhana of him who confounds hell. And Bhante relates how he found this too long at 20 pages, and that he went to see Dujon Rinpoche about that, who was very, very sympathetic, and together they Dujon composed a much shorter sadhana for him, which is called the Confounder of Narak. It seems like Narak means hell, it doesn't say directly, which Bhante does begin to practice alongside the Tara and Manjigoja practices. And apparently Bhante has passed that on to that particular sadhana, on to one other order member. So it's being practiced somewhere. So this, that was 1959. So moving on to 1962, which we are going to do. 1962 was seems to be a really big year for Bhante. It's the year actually that he receives this invitation from the English Sangha Trust to visit Britain. That's the same year. He meets Yogi Chen in the summer of 1962 and begins his weekly meetings with Yogi Chen, as part of which he received the version of the six element practice that we do in Triratna. It came from the Yogacara tradition, of which Yogi Chen was the practitioner mainly. Yes. No time to say much more about Yogi Chen, because he's not particularly involved in a sadhana, unfortunately, so we have to move on. A few weeks later on, Bhante receives the Padmasambhava and Amitayas initiations from Khatshu Rinpoche on the direction of Jamyan Khyentse. And this takes place on the 21st of October, 1962. So that's the Padmasambhava birthday, 21st of October. And Bhante says of Khatshu Rinpoche at that time, "To Khatshu Rinpoche, the precious guru was not just a historical person, he was a spiritual reality. And it was as a spiritual reality that he experienced him when he gave me the Padmasambhava Abhisheka. His devotion to the Guru was very much in evidence." It was at this time that Khatshu Rinpoche bestowed on Bhante the name Urgyen. Bhante says, "I was delighted to receive the name, which served to confirm my connection with the precious Guru, as the Abhisheka itself had done, besides suggesting that my true home was in the mysterious land of Uddiyana." That's a lovely thing to think about oneself, isn't it? His true home was in the mysterious land of Uddiyana. That's where Bhante came from, Uddiyana. Yeah. And after that particular initiation, that time with Khatshu Rinpoche, the next morning, as we know, Bhante went walking in Kalimpong, he went to the bazaar, and he sees a man just sitting on the pavement with a little stall, and he's got some Tibetan woodblock prints for sale just for a few rupees, he says. And so on an impulse, he says he buys these and takes them back, shows them to Khatshu Rinpoche, he thinks it's tremendously auspicious. It's really delighted because these are texts from relating very strongly to Padmasambhava from the Tarpe Delam, where they include the Tarpe Delam text. The smooth path to emancipation. The Tarpe Delam, which we probably know more as the foundation yogas or the mula yogas, those texts. And Kakshi Rinpoche introduces him to those practices. The set of practices which include the going for refuge and prostration practice, the bodhicitta practice, offering of the mandala, the vajrasattva practice, and the guru yoga. And all of those were centered around this Nyingmapa refuge tree with Padmasambhava at the center. And that's actually the practice, the going for refuge and prostration practice with Padmasambhava at the center was the practice that we were doing, and all the others really, when I was first ordained. I was doing that going for refuge and prostration practice and with Padmasambhava right there, and the Dakinis, the wrathful figures and whatever. Of course, some people do still do those ranges of practices. And Kakshi Rinpoche sets Bansi on to do the prostration practice. He has to do it 20,000 times. And Bansi says, this was quite a strenuous practice. And it was a couple of weeks before I could make 100 prostrations straight off without becoming breathless and exhausted. I just quite enjoy those little snippets into Bansi's actual experience. After a while, Bansi is doing these practices daily. He adds in the prostration practice, then he adds in the Vajrasattva visualization, and then the offering of the mandala to Padmasambhava. So he's got quite a big range of practices he's now doing. And he comments that together with his literary work, all of these things were taking him a considerable amount of time. He says, I therefore decided I had no alternative but to cut down my preaching tours of the plains. And the result was that for the best part of 2 years I remained in Kalimpong, spending much of the day either at my desk or in the shrine room. So there's 2 years. We can just think of Bansi doing that. He was practicing, well, there's a green Tara practice, the Manjigosha Stuti Sadhana, a Vajrasattva visualization, the going for refuge and prostration practice, maybe the offering of the mandala to Padmasambhava, perhaps the Padmasambhava. It's hard to know quite exactly what he was practicing, but very rich and sort of quite rounded collection of practices he was doing for those 2 years, and his writing as well. One more teacher, though. Bansi meets the last of his eight teachers in 1963, and that was Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche. Of him, Bansi said, despite being so eminent a lama and so revered, it would have been difficult to find a more unassuming person than Dilgo Khyentse, or one who was more approachable. Which is rather lovely. So Bansi was soon visiting him regularly. He said Dilgo Khyentse, it never seemed to disturb Dilgo Khyentse. He felt like he was always welcome, and Dilgo Khyentse might be in the middle of something when Bansi came in. He would just put it down. It was just very seamless. He would talk to Bansi, and then he would just pick something up again and carry on. Very seamless, very seamless about him. And Bansi also said, the most remarkable thing about the Rinpoche was not his height, which was 6.5 feet, but his smile, which was of extraordinary sweetness, without the least trace of sentimentality, and seemed to come from within, suffusing his features with a kind of glow. So on the 9th of May 1963, Dilgo Khyentse transmitted to Bansi the power or consciousness transference of Amitabha within a Pure Land tradition, apparently. A practice done at the time of death and an oral transmission in the Nyingmapa lineage. Perhaps that was a practice that Bansi did have at his disposal. Power or consciousness transference. And Dilgo Khyentse also gave Bansi the practices of Jambala and Kurukule, which were actually Yogichen apparently did suggest that Bansi receive those two practices to help him as he started a new movement or at least was more active in teaching, because Jambala would ensure riches and Kurukule would ensure disciples. Quite handy. He hasn't passed those on to us, has he? I'm not sure. It looks like there's a gap there somewhere. Bansi had received that invitation of the English Sangha Trust in 62, and he left for England in 1964. And I'm just sort of thinking this particular phase of time before he goes. He does seem to be receiving sadhanas which relate to that, to the fact he's going. And he receives two sadhanas from Dada Rinpoche. So on the 25th of October 1963, he receives an initiation to the medicine Buddha, the blue-bodied Buddha of healing called Vaidurya Prabha, which means blue radiance, whom Bhante had been drawn to on reading the Mahayana Sutra bearing his name. And then slightly later, at the very eve of his departure, Dada Rinpoche gives Bhante the White Tara initiation, the Abhishekha of White Tara, the female bodhisattva of life force, he says. Dada was concerned that I was free to move forward, and concerned in particular that I should not be held back by any threat to my life force. Yeah, very moving. And Bhante talks of how he and Dada worked together on an English version of the sadhana for hours up until he left. He says, sometimes it seemed that there were three of us in the room and that White Tara was looking down on our labours with a smile. So Bhante left the next morning for England, packing in his bag the sadhana written in an exercise book of White Tara. Yeah. So this is a glimpse of Bhante, his life, his sadhanas. And I thought I'd just add at the end that something he said to us to bear in mind, that Bhante wants us to bear in mind, to think about strengthening our connections with him and with his teachers and his yidams. Sangharakshita would like, I'm reading from the initiation into a new life here, Sangharakshita would like all order members to take up, whether at ordination or later, one or more of the main practices he himself was given or received from his Tibetan gurus and has practiced extensively himself. The green Tara sadhana given by Chetro Sangye Dorje, the sadhana of the four-armed Avalokiteshvara, the Manjigosha Stuti sadhana given by Jamnyan Kintse Rinpoche, the Padmasambhava sadhana given by Khatri Rinpoche, as well as the Vajrasattva sadhana from the Tarpe Delam, for which Khatri Rinpoche gave him the authorization, and the Amitabha sadhana, based on his own vision in the Virupaksha cave on Mount Arunachala, as described in the Rainbow Road. So that's Bhante's request to us, to bear that in mind. I thought I'd end with that, and then finally end with a lovely little poem to Padmasambhava, by Bhante. So Bhante and Padmavajra were in a little conversation about this poem, and I'm not sure if Padmavajra said he suggested or Bhante suggested it has got, it's a little bit like a sadhana, it's a bit of a sadhana here. So we're going to end with this poem, Padmasambhava, which she wrote, well, it's in The Call of the Forest, which was published in 2000. I'm not quite sure when Bhante would have written it. Riding a tiger, the guru came. Smile, fierce and friendly, eyes aflame. Riding a tiger from coast to coast, with his vajra, he scattered the demon host. Guru, great guru, dispel my sin. Hurl back the demon hordes within. Transform them to powers that protect the right. Thou the thousand-armed, thou the infinite light.